On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we recap games 5 and 4 of this beautiful World Series and preview game 6. There is Treya Savage talk. There is Michael Bublé chatter. There is Otani gab. There is Vlad legacy discussion. Everything you could ever want from a baseball podcast, or at least we hope. Enjoy, my friends. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who is interested in whether Treya Savage still has rookie eligibility. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And can this youngster really contribute to a big league squad?
I feel pretty good about that. It is kind of unfortunate that Randy Arozarena essentially spoiled this category of fun fact. He did indeed, after his epic 2020 postseason, go on to win the Rookie of the Year in 2021. It will be fascinating to see how much of a favorite Yu Savage is going into the 2026 season. But that rookie, regardless of his official eligibility, is building one hell of a postseason resume. He is becoming a Toronto legend alongside Vladimir Guerrero Jr., which is an absurd sentence if I had said that a few months ago. And that is why Treya Savage is, of course, our opener.
Oh, to be young and unafraid. Treya Savage has been one of the main characters of this postseason. Despite having made just 3 regular season starts before joining the Blue Jays playoff roster, Yu Savage was absolutely dominant in the DS and the CS. For the most part, had a few iffy moments in there, but on the whole was pretty good. However, all 4 of his starts in this postseason before tonight came at home. And I think it was a legitimate question. Could Treya Savage do it on a rainy night in Stoke? Could he, the young boy, traverse himself into Dodger Stadium in front of a sold-out crowd, the largest crowd he may ever pitch in front of, right? Could he do that and handle the noise? And the answer was an emphatic yes. He finishes game number 5 of this World Series, 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 run, no walks, and 12 strikeouts. One of the most unforgettable pitching performances we have ever seen, given the context in the World Series, for a guy who was drafted halfway through last season to be here in this moment on this stage, shining and pushing a franchise to the precipice of a world title, is downright remarkable.
Yeah, and you know, on this episode, we're going to recap game 4 as well, and we'll get to that in our second section, but I wanted to bring it up because, you know, I focused on what Shane Bieber was able to accomplish in game 4 in what I wrote about. And while Bieber's line was not anything outstanding, it was impressive how he managed to navigate this Dodgers lineup. Now, he did not face the same Dodgers lineup that we saw tonight. We obviously had some interesting changes that we can get into. But I bring that up because when you're at this stage, when you are in the postseason, the standards kind of change in the sense that, like, if you can go out and give, you know, 5 1/3 of 1-run ball, it's really impressive. It carries significant weight. It is a huge deal for you to earn a win, even if you're not striking out a million guys. And I really felt that way about Shane Bieber, and it doesn't take anything away from what he did. We'll talk more about him later. But for Yu Savage to come in and not just hold his own, to essentially pitch as well as he ever has against the Dodgers, whatever funk they're going through, whatever weird stuff's going on with their lineup, I don't care. There's a whole lot of experience and talent in that lineup that looked completely overwhelmed in this game. And the stat line is unbelievable. Just the 12th pitcher ever to strike out 12 in a World Series game. The first rookie to do it. The first pitcher to ever strike out 12 without walking anybody. He did hit Freddie Freeman with a kind of a spiked slider. But other than that, you know, 3 hits, the only run being that Kike homer. And I think what's really cool about this game is that you could kind of tell pretty fast I think you messaged right away. Me in the second or third inning, and you were like, this looks like the one we saw against the Yankees, which was 5 1/3 no-hit innings. And this, he ends up, you know, going seven with even more strikeouts, which to think that he could dominate the Dodgers and Yankees lineups to this degree in the postseason is really, really, really something special.
The kid that began the year in the minor leagues, at the bottom of the minor leagues, just made the defending champions look like they belonged in a lower league, right? Like this was not survival. I think what Shane Bieber did in game four was like dodge danger and endure. This was outright dominance, and it was startling. It was stunning for this guy to be in this place doing this thing. I wrote about how you could kind of tell right away with that chopper back to the mound, right? Like Ohtani taps one to Savage in the bottom of the first, and he like jumps for it and it pops out of his glove into the air, and the whole crowd goes, oh, and then he just like so calmly corrals the ball, flicks it over to Vlad, one out, one down. And then the other moment that kind of stuck with me was after he gives up the homer to Kike in the third, he doesn't watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He doesn't watch it. And maybe that's like one of these things where you read into it too much, where it's like, oh, he's so composed. Like, you're only as composed as your pitches and the quality of their execution. But the idea that he was like, oh, yeah, I give up a homer next pitch, right? The composure and the poise for this dude in this spot was always going to be such a big part of the moment and the start. Would he get out of sync? Would he get out of rhythm? Would it get to him? And the answer was definitely no.
Yeah, and I think, by the way, we're glossing over how this game started, and we can get back to that in a second. But let's stick on Yusavage, and let's just round out the Yusavage conversation, because he is absolutely the headliner. He is our opener for a reason. I think my other favorite thing about this box score, again, there's 100 fun facts I could give you that I already started to. I love that every Dodger struck out at least once.
Yeah.
I love that every Dodger at some point had to go back to the dugout thinking like, man, that was nasty. Whether it was,
I think on the Fox broadcast,
there was
a part where they like super cut all the reactions of the Dodgers walking back to the dugout, grimacing mm-hmm. and shaking their head. And that is what this was, right? It was like
and it's so funny, and I don't know how common that is in particular. Obviously, it requires 9 strikeouts, which is a good amount of strikeouts, but I don't know how common it is to strike out every hitter at least once in a game. I think that is just kind of a fun little part of this, and the fact that his only walk was to Alex Call, who is in the game, who's playing. And by the way, that's extra funny because what is Andy Pages famously does not have a walk this postseason. The guy he
Wait, did he walk Call? I thought he didn't walk anybody.
I'm sorry. I apologize. He did not walk anybody. Alex Call is the only one that drew a walk at all in this game. That's my fault. I'm misreading the box score. Alex Call did draw a walk. He was the only one that was against Sir Anthony Dominguez. So you're right. So no, he did not walk anybody. As I mentioned, he did hit Freddie with a pitch. So I guess he's the one that only reached via free pass. But yeah, 3 hits. The 3 hits, I think, were 2 of them were Teoscar Hernandez, one of which was essentially an infield single up the middle that the infielders couldn't get to. The other one was essentially a swinging bunt. And then the Kike homer. So I think I saw that the hardest hit balls against Yusavage, this is another thing I wanted to bring up, is kind of towards the end of his outing, there were a couple very memorable moments. I would say in the 6th, we have Shohei Ohtani hitting a ball 117 to right field and Addison Barger making an unbelievable diving catch. I believe this was the second hardest hit ball of the entire postseason for any hitter, of course, behind only Shohei Ohtani, who hit one even harder. It's his home run against Hunter Green. But that line out and that play from Barger, as we really expand this conversation about the Toronto Blue Jays being one, you know, win away from the World Series, that really felt like kind of a moment where it was like, oh, it's all happening for this team. It is all coming together for the Toronto Blue Jays, that play from Barger. And then in the 7th, when Teo reaches on that, you know, swinging bunt, and Tommy Edmund grounds into a double play to end Yesavage's outing. And when you have that, you're wondering, okay, is he going to be able to get through seven here? You have a base runner. Tommy Edman had a tough night. And then to finish on that double play was absolutely spectacular.
It was so cool, man. Like, we've harped on it, and the story about this kid has been told every single time he's gone out there and pitched in October, but it really can't be emphasized enough. The gap in talent between where he started his season and where he finished his season is, I would say, about as large as any player in the history of the sport, right? When you're talking scale of start one to start last, 327 people were at his first start, 189 were at his fourth start, and over 52,000 people were here tonight, including Leo DiCaprio and, you know, Charlize Theron and whatever. And like, it's literally unbelievable. I literally cannot believe it, that this guy was in low A and here he is in the majors. So congrats to you, Savage. Congrats to his family. My favorite moment from postgame was he had a bottle of tequila in his locker. And I asked Jeff Hoffman, I was like, who put that there? He goes, I don't know, but he deserves it. I'm not even sure he's old enough to drink it. Right. And just getting to talk to like the vets, there's so many veteran arms on this team, right? That's another thing. Yep. Is like Bieber, Cy Young, Scherzer, multiple Cy Youngs, Bassett, rich and old, Gossman, like in his 30s, ace, Jeff Hoffman, over the age of 30, free agent closer. Like, these guys have seen some stuff. And for all of them to be so impressed by Yesavage, not just tonight, but like, they all spoke about the day that he came up and they saw the split and the angle and the whole package in person. And they were like, that will work. That will play. Let's pivot off Yesavage and just get to some of the other beats in this game. Because as you mentioned, it begins with quite a bomb. In fact, two. Davis Schneider in the leadoff spot for the first time in this series because George Springer is down. He swings at the first pitch, taking a Blake Snell heater gone over the fence in left, just clearing the wall. One pitch, one run, one homer. Place goes silent. It is shocked. And they would only get more shocked as two pitches later, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. doubles the advantage with his eighth homer of the postseason, and the Jays are up to and rolling on Blake Snell.
And at that point, Blake Snell's like, ooh, this whole fastball thing's not really working out so well. Which is funny, because on one hand, it's like, yeah, you're down 2-0 in a blink. On the other hand, it's like, small sample size? Like, is your fastball bad now? Or did these two guys just ambush you?
Yeah. The context is important, right? So in his first outing of the series in game one, the big issue for Blake Snell is that he wasn't locating his fastball. He wasn't in the zone with the heater. And when you're not in the zone with the heater, you get behind in counts and you get into problems and your pitch count goes up. And so it appeared today that Snell's, you know, alteration to that strategy was just going to be to fill up the zone with fastballs. First pitch of the game, fastball to Schneider, homer. Goes right back to it, two pitches to Vlad in the zone with fastballs. Second pitch is a homer. And then he just pivots completely, like absolutely abandons that plan right away. And I would say that for the most part, that was probably the right move. But to me, maybe it was just small sample randomness, but there was an element of it that felt like chess, where it was like, we think Snell's going to be in the zone and we're going to be ready to go and hit. The Blue Jays swung at either the first or second pitch of every at plate appearance the first time through the order. Like, they were very, very aggressive.
So that point is very compelling in your favor to what you're getting at. I am going to push back a little bit, though, because, like, and this maybe is credit to Toronto, but getting back to the small sample size, like, if David Schneider just watches strike one and it's a fastball and strike one and he watches it like most normal hitters would when they're leading off the World Series, it's possible Blake Snell was about to throw five changeups and five curveballs and sliders and whatever, and was just going to dice him up with that, right? And for Vlad, you know, he does throw two straight fastballs in the same place, which is maybe not the best
not
idea
smart.
Against Vlad Jr. But, you know, maybe if Vlad fouls that one off, then it's just changeup, curveball, slider, you know. So that's what was so funny about the hard pivot, because essentially immediately, because he then strikes out Bo Bichette throwing five curveballs and a changeup. I think he at one point throws like 25 straight secondary pitches. And by the end of the night, I believe he finished with the lowest fastball usage of his career in a single outing. Now, credits to wow. Snell, he does settle in enough to where the game is still within reach. Now, obviously, Savage is just dicing up the Dodgers to the point where it doesn't feel like they even have a chance. You know, before the Kike home run, Savage strikes out five in a row at one point. But the Blue Jays do add another run in the top of the fourth when Dalton Varsho hits a triple down the right field line that Teoscar Hernandez does not do an awesome job on. It's one of those plays where, like, he probably could have just kept it in front of him for the single, but instead he dives for it and Varsho gets to third. That allows
Clement
to drive him in with the sacrifice fly. And then, you know, Barger walks, but then he strikes out IKF and Jimenez. So no, anything else in the middle innings,
right?
Like, Snell's outing.
Snell settles in, like, after the Varsho play, which wasn't really his fault, right? Like, that should have just been a single.
Yeah.
He retires one, like, he basically cruises through the fifth, the end of the fourth, the fifth, and the sixth. They choose to send it back out for the seventh, and that's kind of where things go awry. Barger singles, Kiner Falefa grounds out, because that's what he does. Jimenez walks, Straw K's, and it's like, all right, Snell, like, are your relievers going to let your runners score again? And the answer was yes.
So it was funny because, you know, he comes out for the seventh. I assumed that he was just going to get the bottom of the lineup with the two lefties, and then with Schneider coming up, you would then go to some pitcher that obviously we weren't going to feel awesome about, but presumably he wasn't going to face the top of the lineup again. Certainly not face Vlad again, right? But okay, maybe you trust him against David Schneider, so be it. Instead, he allows the single to Barger, as you mentioned. Wild pitch, Barger goes to second. That's important because when IKF grounds out, it's not a double play. Okay, so yep. that's important. He walks Jimenez, and then at this point, it's like, wow, Blake Snell, here we are. Blake Snell, and after 5 years after, it's like, how could you take Snell out of this World Series game? It's like, why is Blake Snell still in this World Series game? They're just leaving him out there. He does strike out David Schneider, which, you know, credit to him. But this next moment is important because it's a two-run game. The bases are loaded, or I guess it's first and third at this point, right? Were you surprised it was Enriquez? I mean, again, it's just like, yeah, okay. So it's like,
there's no good option. There's no good option. Like, you can make an argument it should have been Roki, right? But, like, Emmett Sheehan has struggled out of the bullpen. The 18-inning masterclass the other night is looking more and more like an aberration instead of a point proven. And I think that that game shadowed today, right? Enriquez does not get this spot if he doesn't look as good as he did the other night. And he's not needed because of all the usage, right? They don't go to Trinan, which I think, like, if they just go back to Trinan and he's bad, you're like, why are they continuing to go to Trinan? They're not going to go to a lefty to get Vlad out. You probably want to save Sasaki for when you're up. You don't trust Sheehan. It's like, what are you going to do, right? Will Klein threw 1,000 pitches. And so I was surprised it was Enriquez. But I don't think it's like this historic mistake or anything like that. Now, Enriquez just doesn't have it. And this is we in two nights saw the beautiful side of Enriquez and the ugly side, right? Where he cannot find the strike zone at all. He issues a walk to Vlad. He allows a single to Bichette. He issues a walk to Kirk. Addison Barger scores on a wild pitch, who, by the way, he singled, moved to second on a wild pitch, went to third on a wild pitch, and scored on a wild pitch. I wonder if that is the first time in World Series history
a player did
three wild pitches.
So it's just, and that's where it was like, okay, like, I guess you think that he has the best chance to strike out Vlad. I assume that's roughly the logic. But if he can't throw in the zone, he can't throw in the zone. Bo was ready for the heater next at bat. That makes it 5-1 Blue Jays. And now let's turn the attention back to the Dodgers offense. Because yes, while Savage is dominating and he's got one more inning in him, this Dodgers lineup shakeup, to say it backfired doesn't really make sense because it's like Savage was that good and like maybe he would have done that against whatever arrangement. It is funny that they shook up the lineup in a fairly dramatic way, right? Having Mookie bat third for the first time in 4 years, move Will Smith up to second, you know, you ditch Pages finally for the first time in the postseason, and you essentially deliver one of your worst offensive performances of the season. Now, again, that is credit to Savage, 100%. He was awesome. But if the Dodgers were looking for some sort of spark, some sort of change, Will Smith looked terrible and Mookie continued to look bad and everyone looked bad, right? Savage was that good. But the sequence there is a tough look, I think. And it does also make me wonder, it's like, well, can you go back? Are you going to do something different for game six? Like, this is where the Dodgers now find themselves in a very interesting position. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. But it is just because I bring that up now because at 5-1, I was like, oh, this game's a wrap. Like, I have no confidence, even against the Blue Jays bullpen that is maybe shaky. And Sir Anthony was a little shaky again, but Hoffman shut it down, and that was a wrap. I mean, I guess they score another run later. Once you're giving up RBI singles to IKF, you know it's not happening for you. So Banda, a tough one there. Sir Anthony comes in. He walks Alex Call, as I mentioned. But other than that, he gets Ohtani to ground out. And, and then I guess Hoffman looks good at the end of the game, and that's a wrap. The Blue Jays are a win away from the World Series.
All right, so since 2000, Dodgers currently are, just for batting average, which I do think is more relevant in October, like in the World Series, the Dodgers 201 batting average right now is the ninth worst in this century in a World Series, which is just very uncharacteristic for this particular ball club.
That is not enough hits. And especially when you're going up against the team that led baseball in batting average and had another 9 hits tonight. That's tough. That's going to be a difficult thing to overcome. But we will get to the Dodgers' chances of extending this season a little bit later. Let's take a break. When we return, we will do a quick look back at Game 4 before we, of course, look ahead to Game 6. We'll be right back on Baseball Broadcast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. That was Game 5. Let's do Game 4 as we move back in time. A game that the Blue Jays won 6-2. This game was probably the least interesting that we have had so far in this World Series. As far as the game action and narrative and drama was concerned. But the fact that the Blue Jays won this game is remarkable. The fact that both these teams even showed up to play it is a sensational thing, considering that they played 18 hours the evening before. Shohei Ohtani, who went 4-for-4. I can't believe this is real. I'm just going to say this. Shohei Ohtani went 4-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 doubles, 4 intentional walks, and 1, you know, peasant walk. He was on the mound the following night for his first World Series start on the bump, and he was fine. In fact, I would say he was pretty freaking good considering the circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. You misspoke earlier and said they had played 18 hours the night before, but that's also accurate because the game went seven hours almost, and it had only been basically about 18 hours between the last out, the ball going over the fence. There was no last out, we should say.
The last out was Will Klein.
Was Will Klein. Hell yeah, it was. Where was Will Klein tonight? Probably still has some ice on his shoulder. Anyway, but yes, of course, it was just showing up to the ballpark yesterday. It was preposterous. It was just like, how are these people going to play another baseball game?
That's what was so interesting, is that there was this glaze over the entire place. And the traffic getting in was way lighter than it was the day before. I left my credential behind and our editor to come give it. Like, the whole day was just so disjointed. And for all these people to show up, put on baseball pants, I know they're making, you know, fortunes to do so. The fact that, you know, like in a normal work day, you'd be like, why don't you just take it easy tomorrow? We'll push it back. Like, well, nope. 5 o'clock local.
That's when we're rolling, baby.
not
an option. And so, yeah, we just went right into it. Now, I will say, you know, there wasn't. It is interesting now we're jumping ahead, but it's like, okay, who has been more affected by this? It's, of course, easier to be like, oh, well, the Dodgers have been. Buster only had a tweet that was like, talked to a rival evaluator saying like, yeah, the Dodgers look more tired. They are a lot older. That's not totally wrong, especially when you're talking about the position player groups. It is like a huge discrepancy. We did just talk about how old the Blue Jays pitchers are, and that is very true outside of your Savage. But yeah, I mean the Blue Jays are they're chilling. They're like, all right, cool. Yeah. We're gonna get to play another baseball game. And while there isn't a whole lot going on early on in this game, I will say that. I'll let you focus on Vladdy, and then I'll focus on Bieber because that's what we ended up writing about.
I want to do two more things. Sure. Like in the lead up to this game, one is that Springer's out. Okay, right. So remember in the 18 inning marathon, George Springer hurts his side. He's not in the lineup for game 4, but they don't pull him off the roster. Okay, that's also, we should have mentioned that for tonight. It seemed that based upon how John Schneider was talking, that Springer was available in some form tonight. Springer does end up like putting a helmet on to run late in the game. At least as a decoy. I believe that happened. I could be wrong. I think I read that.
I mean, also, like, but he obviously didn't have a reason to come into this game. So, like, it's possible a different game does put him into the game in some.
Right.
But the night
before, like, in the madness of the maelstrom, it's like, what? Oh, right. He's hurt. Like, right. And so it is relevant that he's still on the roster and he's not starting. That tells us something about where he's at moving forward. Okay. The other thing was, are the Jays going to intentionally walk Shohei Ohtani to start the game? Right? Game three finishes with 4 consecutive intentional walks and then a peasant walk. And it's like, are the Jays just going to throw up the 4 right away with nobody on and nobody out in the first? Something that I can't believe has ever happened before in baseball history. I'm not going to double check that right now, but there's no chance. No. Shane Bieber pitches to him and walks.
Now, it was important how the walk unfolds, though, because while he does immediately go to 3-0, he works it to a full count, and the last pitch was a pretty close changeup on the outer half of the plate. Now, that's important because the next time they face each other, and I'm going to skip past some of the scoring here, but I'm just going to mention this in the bottom of the third. He strikes out Ohtani on essentially that exact same pitch. A changeup low and away, perfectly executed from Bieber. Execution was obviously the name of the game. He was not overwhelming the opponents because he's throwing 93. And his slider was not... The slider, which is the swing and miss pitch for Bieber, he just didn't have it. He admitted that afterwards. He was leaning more on the cutter more than he had all season. He still had the curveball. The slider was sort of getting better as the night went on. He was placing the fastball and the changeup where he wanted. And then, again, skipping ahead, he strikes out Ohtani again on a backdoor knuckle curve where Ohtani is looking. So he gets Ohtani to strike out twice. That was absolutely sick. And Ohtani ends up having his first hitless game since NLCS game 1. So
is he washed?
That is a huge part of this game from a Dodgers offensive standpoint because of how much they were, of course, relying on him the night before. And Bieber, and then I think Bassett is who got him later, was able to keep him in check. And the rest of the Dodgers offense was, you know, they get a Kike sac fly in the second, but Bieber really settled in after that. And of course, the big swing for Toronto, the most memorable swing for Toronto that, you know, they add on with the 4-run inning later, after Ohtani leaves and then it gets messy, is yet another Vlad Jr. homer. Now, we really kind of skipped past the one that he hit tonight. This one was way more memorable because it was against Ohtani, because it did flip the score, made it 2-1 Toronto. And obviously,
it flipped the series.
Absolutely. And that's why it deserved the attention it did. Then that's what you wrote about last night.
Yeah. I mean, in that moment, you're for the first like two innings of the game last night, you're still thinking about the 18 inning game and the Blue Jays having to shoulder that loss. And John Schneider, Blue Jays skipper, in the aftermath said, "We did not lose the World Series. We lost the game." It's one thing to say it. It's another to internalize that. And for the first two innings, the Blue Jays did not seem to be internalizing that, right? It felt like a continuation. And then when Vlad hits that ball, it's like, we're doing this. Like, we're going to do
also,
this. Like, this series is not over.
And also, remember, Ohtani strikes Vlad out in the first inning with, I believe, three straight, or I guess it was fastball and then two straight sweepers. One he got the call on, and then Vlad just flailing at the last one. But then this sweeper does not sweep nearly enough. It hangs up and in, and Vlad hits it over the fence. I mean, you're totally right. For how we were feeling going into the game, for what it felt like, it was potentially series defining. There have obviously been a lot of big swings, big single moments, and because this was like earlier in the game, and that game in particular was not actually that memorable, it might get lost in the grand scheme of things, but you're totally correct. It totally changes everything, because Ohtani does he got into a pretty weird groove there, and you're just watching and you're just like, how is this happening? How does he have any energy to get up there throwing 99 miles an hour and just, you know, we weren't seeing any splitters. Like, clearly he was working. I will say, it did seem, with how often he was shaking off Will Smith and with how much it was just fastball and really sweeper curveball, like, it seemed like he was kind of working with more of a limited arsenal, but it was pretty freaking good for six innings. It ultimately kind of falls apart in the seventh. He allows a hit to Varsho and a double to Ernie Clement, which is nearly a home run. And then Anthony Bonda comes in and makes kind of a mess of it. Jimenez has an incredible at-bat, eight pitches. He drives in a run, makes it 3-1 Toronto. France drives in a run. Bo drives in a run against Trinan, because Trinan just looks awful against Bo and Barger. And then suddenly it's 6-1, and once again, with how, you know, the Dodgers had been swinging the bats, which by the way, extends back to game three as well, right? We're not just talking about in this game against Bieber or the game that would eventually follow it in game five against E. Savage. It's also what they looked like for most of game three, right? I mean, this is not an offense that has been very coherent outside of a few big swings from their stars, whether that's Will Smith and Teoscar with the homers, whether that's Freddie Freeman with the walk-off, whether that's all the Ohtani stuff. It has been essentially the exact opposite of the Blue Jays offense, right? Not just in effectiveness, but in style.
That the Dodgers needed 18 innings to beat Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Miles Straw, Tyler Heineman, and friends says something, yeah, right?
Says a lot.
That says something. Yeah. Says a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Respectfully.
Yeah. So anyway, but this is, again, it's just, it wasn't particularly competitive at the end. I mean, I guess Louis Varland pitches once again, and they score against him, but it's 6-2.
Well,
and that's what
Ohtani
ties up the series.
Things kind of get away from him right at the end. Like,
yeah.
He comes back out for the seventh, single to Varsho, double to Ernie Clement. And then that starts the bullpen carousel. In comes Anthony Bonda. He can't hold the lead. He can't hold things where they're at. The Jays put up four runs in that inning. There's a Vlad intentional walk, which I loved, because it was like, oh, it's not just you, show. Like, I too am this kind of guy. And the Dodgers tack one on in the ninth, and it's fine, and they lose 6-2. It's not a game I'll remember. It was a swing that I will remember. It's just another layer on top of what has already been a legacy-defining October for one of the game's best players. We are witnessing something special with Vlad, particularly Blue Jays fans, right? Like, this is what fandom is about, right? I went back and watched the press conference for Vlad's contract extension, right? Last night. And there was something, I think Mark Shapiro said it, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it was effectively a generation of Canadian baseball fans will view the sport almost entirely through this person, right? That Vlad will be the vehicle, he will be the North Star, he will be the guiding light of what the sport means to the country. And that is an enormous thing, right? That is a large concept. Oh, yeah. But it is one that this man has been shouldering his entire life. His name is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You do not dodge expectations, you know? And I was just, it was so cool to see what he was able to do last night. Jordan, anything else from game four before we take a break and move ahead to game six?
Nope. I could talk about Vlad forever, but I think we'll have more time to talk about that over the next week or so. Cool. So we'll take a break when we return and we'll preview game six.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We're recording this at 11:41 p.m. Pacific time. And that is relevant because in a couple of hours, we will no longer be on Pacific time as we will head to LAX, board our respective flights, and journey across this enormous continent, not directly, with a stop in an American city that I honestly don't remember where I'm flying through. And we will emerge on the other end back in Toronto, Canada, in the cold. Our coats, they will also emerge from our overpacked suitcases. We will bundle up and we will attend game six of this World Series on Friday night at Rogers Center. On the mound for the Toronto Blue Jays will be their ace, Kevin Gausman, up against the Dodgers, one of their 25 aces, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. But Yamamoto, this postseason, feels pretty easy to say, he is 1A at this point. Coming off two complete games, first back-to-back complete games in the postseason in over 25 years. Jordan, how would you handicap this matchup in game six?
Oh my goodness. What a stage for Yamamoto to try and do something really special here. He already has. It seems absurd. They're going to basically ask him to do it again. The last... I'm writing a little Game 6 preview. And for those wondering, in case Yamamoto is cruising again and they have no interest in turning to the bullpen, the last pitcher to throw multiple complete games in the World Series and win both of them, because there were a couple like losing efforts. I think Dave Stewart and Tom Glavine had a win and a loss in complete game form. Last guy to have two complete game victories, no, not that far, is more of an appropriate historic parallel, and that is Orel Hershiser in 1988.
Wow.
However, Hershiser, when he was doing that against the A's in 1988, he pitched game two and game five, both of which came with a series lead. Of course, Game 5 ended up winning the World Series for the Dodgers that year. This is very different. This is Yamamoto, after evening up the series in Game 2, now facing elimination. And how the Blue Jays, with potentially a different lineup than the one they went out there against Yamamoto with in Game 2, not out of strategic reasons, because George Springer is probably still injured, but maybe he's back in there on Friday. That is relevant as George Springer was accounted for two of the five base runners that they had against Yamamoto in the complete game with his leadoff double and hit by pitch. But yeah, how do the Blue Jays respond here? Because what Yamamoto is doing is obviously not something we've seen in a very, very long time. And what I'm so excited about, not just, of course, the stakes and the stage are all speaks for itself, but because of what Yamamoto is, because of the kind of pitcher that he is, there's so many possibilities for like the directions that he can go in terms of how he chooses to pitch. Conversely, Kevin Gausman, it's not like he's going to suddenly break out a curveball. You know, like we kind of know what Kevin Gausman is going to do in some form with his three pitches. Whereas Yamamoto, man, like it was heavy split fastball, and then it was a lot of that curveball too. But with six pitches, do we see more of a sinker? Do we see more of the cutter? Like, this can go in so many different directions. That is why I'm so on top of the fact that, if you can't tell, I just adore this guy, and he's one of my favorite pitchers that I've watched in my time doing this. That is what is so exciting about, let alone how important the game is, of course, with them facing elimination, what it looks like, what he attempts to do against this Blue Jays lineup, which is obviously sniffing a championship. I'm so excited for that.
And the Dodgers, I mean, it sets up perfectly right for them. Yeah, their offense has been terrible, but if you're going to enter an elimination game with a terrible offense, you'll want to do it with your best pitcher on the mound. Freaking duh. And that's what they get to do in game six. Like, if they were starting anybody else tomorrow, I would be more worried, right? And as a neutral, I love the way this sets up, right? Because I think you have to give the Dodgers the advantage in game six based upon what Yamamoto did in his first start in the World Series. And if he goes out there and shoves, we got our game seven on a silver platter. Now, I don't want to look past that. I'm not like burying the Jays against Yamamoto. Gausman is very good. That game was close for a good chunk of it. But the idea that he's got to go out there to keep the season alive is amazing. He warmed up briefly in the marathon game three. Does that play a role? Is that does that interest you at all? Do you think that has any effect or impact?
Not enough. Not really. I don't think. I think he already talked about it afterwards. I'm sure they'll show the video, and like, it's part of his story for sure. As far as impacting him, because he didn't actually get in the game, I'm not putting too much stock into that. So yeah, I mean, it really sets it up. And now all that said, like, the Dodgers got to start scoring some runs, and Gossman's good, and the Blue Jays bullpen has mostly had some good moments, but also had some low moments. If the Dodgers lose this game, let's say Yamamoto's good, but not perfect, and they lose a very similar game to the last two nights, that's a hell of a way to go out. With the names in this lineup, man, that really is. And now, again, long way to go. Dodgers could still win the World Series for sure. But that is something that is, especially after, well, as part of that 18 inning game too, it's part of the story. It's, as you already mentioned earlier, this is a pretty poor offensive performance. I believe their batting average, down to 201, which, is really bad. Not good enough.
You said earlier how you're excited to see what version of Yamamoto shows up, like what character he plays. And I'm fascinated to see how the Jays counteract him, because if they are as aggressive as they were tonight, then Yamamoto could just, or as they were in game two, Yamamoto's just going to go the distance, right? Tonight, their strategy seemed to be, we're going to try and pop Snell. And the best way to get Snell out of the game is to punch him early, right? Yamamoto, that seems harder to do, right? And so I'm curious if they alter their approach at all to be a little bit more purposefully passive in some spots to try and push that pitch count up. I bet it depends on how the game looks. Do they get a run early? Does Gausman throw up zeros, right? Just something to keep an eye on. I, on my little scorebook, I write the pitch count for each inning, and we got a lot of single digits on both sides in game two. And I think if Yamamoto throws up single digits, the Dodgers are going to take game six.
Yeah. But it was both sides. It is important to remember how good Gausman looked until the homer. Homers? Did he allow both of them at the end of the game? Obviously the one to Will Smith. So that will loom. But the Dodgers are probably going to need more than just home runs at this point. But I don't know. We will see. All we do know is that this World Series is going to end in Canada. And that is a hell of a sentence for anybody, even. Listen, it's so stupid because they're the number one seed. They played great for essentially three, four straight months. we even come into the World Series. It's like, yeah, no, they got a good shot here. And now, watching these last two games, how they've bounced back after 18 innings, it's just like, yeah, no, they look better. So
also, this Dodgers team yet, looks like the one that got swept in Pittsburgh in front of you the last two nights, right? True. We've seen
that's
the Dodgers
exactly,
do
that
this.
Is exactly correct. That is exactly correct. And that is exactly correct.
Dude, the conversation all month was, like, leading into the playoffs was, can they flip the switch? And the answer was yes.
And they did.
Did they turn it off? Oh. Like, you know,
that's certainly what flip it's looked like. It's sure
the
seems
you know
like
what?
They,
the Dodgers should unplug it and plug it back in. They should try that. See if that works for them. Before we get out of here, Jordan, another thank you to all the people listening for the kind words about our last podcast. We grind late because we love it. Jordan, 17 times over the last 3 days, we saw Shohei Ohtani come to the plate. And each time he came to the plate, the first phrase of his walk-up song blasted over the Dodgers stadium loudspeakers. What are those words, Jordan? Say it. Say them.
And I'm feeling good.
And there is no way that Shohei Ohtani is feeling good, right? We're not feeling good. Not complaining. You know, we're starting to wear it a little bit here. Lack of sleep starting to get to us. But the idea that Ohtani came to the plate all those times, Jordan, and like each time, especially after the 18-inning game, and he was like, I'm feeling good. All right, man. But I'll tell you what. I'm feeling damn good about this World Series. This has been a banger.
Yes.
I am so happy that it's going six. I hope it goes seven. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling good.
I do feel like he's still feeling better than most of the other Dodgers at this point. But we will see how this unfolds. You will not hear from us again before game six. So enjoy the off day. And we will we'll talk to you again soon, my friends. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas once again for staying up late and making this podcast possible. You can email us at baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. And we will talk to you all this weekend about the World Series, which is gonna come to an end here.
It's almost over.
It's gonna come to an end, and it's almost over, folks. We're running out of games. We'll see what happens. Talk soon. Bye bye.
And I'm feeling good. Boom, boom.